Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Jason Croft, is at the controls this morning. Once again, in the second hour of the show, we are talking with some of the people who are here, special guests taking part in Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival, hosted here by the university and by Champaign-Urbana. It's been going on now for a number of years. And in conjunction with, there are films that are shown, but also in conjunction with that, there are panel discussions. There's a lot of talk about movies, people who make movies and perform in them and produce them and write about them and just love movies come really from all over the world to watch films together and to talk about them. And we're pleased that here this morning we're able to talk with some of these folks. So in this part of Focus 580, we will be talking with Gerson DeCunha and David Poland. Gerson DeCunha is both a journalist and an actor. He has performed on the stage and in film, and as a journalist has written about many different sorts of things, but also does write about theater and film. He has a background in marketing, started out there. He also worked for a number of years for UNICEF, and we're pleased to have him here. Also, as our guest, David Poland. He's the author of a widely read daily entertainment industry column, The Hot Button, which will soon celebrate its 8th anniversary on the internet. He's also editor-in-chief and publisher of MovieNews.com, which is a movie news site that's also very popular. It's become a popular place for people to go to get news about the industry. As I said, we're really glad to have the two of them here, and we'll talk a little bit. One of the things I know that we want to talk about is about Indian film. And if you people have other sorts of questions about movies, all they have to do is call 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, I thank you both very much for being here. We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. And by the way, my publicist obviously doing a bad job, MovieCityNews.com. I'm not sure if there is a MovieNews.com, but
movie, I misread. then it's that is correct here. MovieCityNews.com. Okay. Find it on the web near you.
Exactly.
I thought that it would be interesting, particularly since Gerson DeCunha was here, for you to talk a little bit, for us to talk a little bit about Indian cinema. I don't know how much opportunity people who might be listening to us might have had to see some Indian film. But I guess the place to start out to make sure that people know is that the Indian film industry is huge, bigger than the United States, bigger than any place else, more movies produced per year than any other country. And in different language groups, different parts of India, because it's a big place, why is maybe there's no answer to this question. Why is it that this is such an enormous industry? Maybe because the audience is so big.
Well, those of you who have never seen an Indian movie, run, don't walk to your friendly Virginia theater where Dal is being exhibited on Sunday, and you won't get in. why do we have such an enormous film industry? Well, to begin with, we're an enormous country. It's a population of slightly over 1 billion. And for a century, perhaps, there was no real means of entertainment of the fantasy that can carry you away from a very hard daily life than cinema. So that created the 10,000 cinemas that are still functioning in the country, not counting the tent cinemas of the South, and a 10 million daily audience.
Wow, that's 10 million people go to the movies every day.
So, I mean, it's enough to make the mouth of theater owners in the United States water. But it's coming down with television. Now, you said cinema in many languages. Yes, 6 major languages and 900 films are produced every year, 80% of which do not pay back the money that's been invested. And, David, I suppose the quick answer to your question is that the Indian film industry is enormous, the largest in the world. After a bit of a dip in the last decade, let's say, is fighting its way back because it continues to be dreamland.
Hmm. David, I would imagine you have had some opportunity to see some,
absolutely,
some Indian films.
I'm actually very curious with you here as an expert. I mean, it does seem the Indian film industry has changed a bit in the last decade. and that films are becoming much more realistic, actually, and that they're, you know, moving towards – there have been remakes of Reservoir Dogs, and there have been things like that that have been very controversial but have been popular. Is that the future?
Yes, it is. Now, the change is a result of three or four things. Firstly, there's a new kind of director, producer, and actor, better educated, more technically orientated. So that's one, the kind of people in the industry. Secondly, the television has arrived, and accustomed audiences to a different style of presentation and a different quality of production. And thirdly is the arrival of the multiplex, alas. Mm. Now, the multiplex, what the multiplex does, I suppose, is it provides an outlet for a kind of producer and director who otherwise would never get a look in the days of 500 to 1,000 seaters. Because the question always would be, how do we fill these last? As a result of that, of the multiplexes, you're getting a new distribution and exhibition philosophy and methodology, particularly because multiplexes are a sharing of profits. You don't pay huge sums of money for distribution as you once did. Of course, it does mean the disappearance of marvelous edifices like the Metro Cinema in Bombay, which was built in 1937. It's an Art Deco building. It's a heritage building. Mm. So while the facade of it remains, the inside of it has been gutted with the disappearance of 50-foot murals done in that style of the 30s, but Indianized. So, I mean, while the Art Deco bathrooms have disappeared in the Metro, I suppose it's a sacrifice that you make to the future of Indian cinema.
Well, you know, Roger started this festival in part to save the Virginia here in Champaign-Urbana.
Did he?
Which
now?
A lot of the money from the – all the money from the festival, yeah. I guess – has gone to renovating that theater.
God bless
over
Roger.
The years.
And it's it is a beautiful old theater, and it's a big screen, and it's the kind of theater experience that a lot of people now don't have or don't have very often, because the very same thing that Gerson was just talking about. Well, it's happened here in the United States and some time ago now. Now, pretty much in most places, if you're going to the movies, you do go to the multiplex, and there are 16, 20, 30, 50, however many screens. Mm-hmm. They're not very big. Even though I think some places have tried to make the seating a little bit more comfortable, it's not the same as the old-time movie palaces where people used to go.
Well, it's an interesting balance because you have a theater with over 1,000 seats here, and it's extremely hard to fill that theater. I mean, it's a great thing that we have the Overlook Festival and people show up and sell out almost every show. And in fact, having come here for years now, I've seen, you know, movies like 2001 where people say, well, it's not so overlooked, but seeing it in 70 millimeter on a screen that size is something you've never had a chance to do.
That's right. I got a chance to go and see that some years ago. We had a thing here on the campus celebrating the development of the computer, and one of the things that was pegged to was the fact that in that movie they say HAL, the computer, was born in Urbana.
Yeah.
And they had a showing in the movie, and they had it at the Virginia. And one of the things that I remember is that even before the movie started, the curtains were closed, but they were thin enough so the movie can actually be projected through the curtains. And so the movie starts, and the first thing is that there's a stylized MGM lion logo appears. And people started to applaud. It wasn't even the movie yet. And people started to applaud just with the logo. And then the screen comes up, and to be able to see it, like when I was a kid, I was lucky enough and I saw that movie the first time when it was new, and my dad took me downtown to Chicago, and we saw it in a screen that was enormous, and it was just sort of overwhelming, the visual impact of that. And it's nice to be able to have that kind of experience where you can feel swallowed up by the movie, and that just doesn't, as the screen gets smaller, you know, that may be fine, but it's not the same kind of experience.
Yeah, why not have television?
You know? Exactly so.
But when the cultural passion has changed so much. I mean, I actually saw Devdas in Los Angeles at the American Cinematheque, and there was an audience of Indian people there besides the kind of L.A. crowd. And when the actors came up to the front of the theater, they were crazed. I mean, they were absolutely amazed to see them in public. And, you know, it was a beautiful thing, which you never see in Hollywood anymore. You never see that kind of energy and that love. And I guess you have Aishwarya Rai in your picture
Yes.
That's Sunday, and she's now been touted as the most beautiful woman in the world, and we're seeing her in America for the first time.
She's pretty easy on the eye. I know it was Roger and maybe some other people have repeated that, saying they thought she might be the most beautiful woman in the world. She's pretty good looking.
Yeah, but I'm sure she's not the most. Well, you know, in Thal, by the way, the film that Roger is going to screen mm-hmm. on Sunday. She really is tremendous. But this was a few years ago, though.
1999.
Yeah, 5 years ago, when she might have been at her best if she appeared in the flesh now. I mean, if she appeared in three dimension now, people would make evil comparisons, I think. Yeah. But to go back to the question that David Poland asked about the changes in Indian cinema, yes, those things are really beginning to tell. You mentioned Devdas. You mentioned Sanjay Leela Bhansali's Devdas just now. Mm-hmm. You must wait to see a film. His most recent film is something called Black. It's a straightforward lift of a Hollywood film of a little girl who is blind deaf and is slowly taught to communicate. So it's a lift of that idea, except that in this case, the girl who is brought back into communication also is able to help her teacher to communicate better than he did. Mm. Now, Black is a film that has two superstars. It has Amitabh Bachchan as the teacher, and it has Rani Mukherjee as the girl. All right, but they are completely de-beautified, de-glamorized, you know. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, it's small budget. And it has no dances. It has no songs. It has pretty much no dialogue. And what dialogue there is in English. Devdas is 1,000 miles away, you know. Mm-hmm. So it shows, in a sense, the direction in which Indian cinema is going. Another film that both you, Davids, might look for is called Page 3. A much lower budget film, enormously successful. Now, Black, while people have applauded and stood up in the audiences and clapped, has not paid back the money that was invested for the simple reason that distributors have taken most of the money. But Page 3, which is about high society, a sort of peekaboo film about high society, that was low budget, and if you speak to the director, he says, "Look here, I treat my producer. He's the director. Mm-hmm. I treat my producer as a client, and I say, what kind of film do you want? And I produce it. Mm-hmm. So that's the direction in which cinema is going in India these days.
Are you happy about that?
I am, I think, because what was happening was that what you were getting as cinema was a very low IQ producer-director's view of what Indian society is and wanted, you know? Mm-hmm. As a result of which, you got the resonance between here's a huge mass audience that is, a lot of it, medieval, and you have cinema that is, to a certain extent, medieval as well. And then that echo-re-echo creates a resonance, the addition of which is multiples of the sum. So in a way, that cinema was retarding progress, was retarding changes in mindset.
Let me take a moment here to introduce again the guests, because we might have had people who've tuned in the last 5 or 10 minutes. Jersant Kunia is a journalist and also an actor. He's from India. He's a columnist and writer in the Indian press, and in much of his writing deals with social issues and civic issues. But he also does write about film and about theater, and has also performed on stage and in film. David Poland writes a daily entertainment industry column, The Hot Button, and also editor-in-chief and publisher of MovieCityNews.com, which is a movie news site on the web. And both of them are here to take part in Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival that's now going on here on the here in Champaign-Urbana, and some events also on the U of I campus. Questions are welcome, too. People want to be involved in the conversation. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Yesterday afternoon, I had the opportunity to spend just a little time chatting with Jersin, and I talked about the fact that here in the United States, over the last couple of years, some Chinese language action films had enjoyed some success. Movies like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Hero, and House of Flying Daggers were the three recently that have gotten fairly wide distribution, people might have seen, and gotten them jazzed about those kind of movies. And myself, personally, I have a soft spot for Hong Kong action films. I like them a lot. And my question to him was, I said, well, I thought that was kind of interesting, and I wondered maybe whether there was greater potential here in the United States for Indian films, and not just for people who are Indian, for people of the Indian diaspora, but for American audiences. And one of the things he said was really interesting about particularly about these movies that I mentioned, these Chinese movies, he said, well, those aren't really Chinese movies. and I know that what he meant by that was that the directors who made them had in their mind the idea that they wanted a non-Chinese audience. So those movies might be different from movies that they might have made if they were just thinking that Chinese people would watch them.
Well, kind of depends movies. Which of the directors you talk to. I mean, they each have a different perspective on the universe. And Kung Fu Hustle, which is currently slowly moving into release and is hopefully going to do very well, is a picture by Stephen Chow, who made Shaolin Soccer, which was unceremoniously badly released by Miramax. Which almost did the same thing to Hero, which ended up doing about $60 million last summer. It makes people very nervous. The whole subtitle issue and the whole idea of other cultures makes a very hard sell. So you see every commercial for a foreign language picture has no dialogue, no subtitles, pretending it's not happening, Quentin Tarantino presents. But Kung Fu Hustle is a picture that is so commercial and feels so commercial that Sony Pictures has taken an extra effort. Even it's a Sony Classics release, but the big company said we're going to invest another $10, $20 million in marketing this movie because we think it can do $50, $60, $70 million. So there is a slight change in the mindset. Stephen Chow is very anxious to come to America and make a Hollywood movie. He wants a $100 million budget. He wants a big – I mean it's a very CG-oriented picture, a lot of computer graphics in it, very kind of high-end. It's made by a lot of the people who were involved with The Matrix. Help make the picture. So he wants to sell out. Then you have a guy like the director of Hero who, you know, you talk to him, all he wants to do is talk about Chinese philosophy and that he is a product of the state and he's very much into it. Now, some of that may be subjugation by the Chinese government, but there are different mindsets. Mm-hmm. And so – but in terms of crossover – you know, there's a huge market for Indian pictures in this country. There's a huge market for Quebecois movies, French movies. If you look at the charts, America and Canadian films. But the crossover is very, very difficult, and they keep on trying. Yeah. There was Bollywood Dreams. There was the Aishwarya Rai picture that was just out, whose name I'm forgetting. Maybe that was Bollywood Dreams. But Hollywood Bollywood. They've been keep on trying. But America's we're still kind of like in Grease mode. But it's hard to get Grease made. You know, in many ways, the Bollywood picture – Grease is very much, in a weird way, a Bollywood movie. But it's – America has been kind of slow in going. And we're going to get a wave of musicals in the next 2 years. We'll have two musicals this Christmas and two next Christmas. And hopefully it'll start to break the line a little. Aishwarya's gotten some press in America for the first time, 60 Minutes and all of that. So the beginnings are there. But America's – very into hamburger. Yeah.
It's not just America's not ready for the crossover. It's that India's not ready for the crossover, really. The kind of film that is being made pretending to be crossover is not at all. The framework remains resolutely Indian. And the second thing is, as I was saying at a session not long ago, perhaps you were there, David Poland, the Indian cinematic style is a cinematic style that is based on noise. In other words, the noise level that we live in India is extremely high. So we live shouting, as it were. Otherwise, you're not going to be heard or understood. So therefore, our cinema has got to match that. And matching that means cinema at a high decibel level, number one. Now, that's not a particularly pleasant thing for European and North American audiences. The second thing is that we are very in the face. We're very obvious. We repeat the obvious, and then we recap the obvious. As a result of which, you know, you've been at to a three-hour movie, which is what Indian movies tend to be, full of repetition and things in the face. Music you don't particularly understand, and pelvic gyrations that pass for choreography. Now, that's not the kind of film that invites crossover audiences, you see. Mm-hmm. And that, unfortunately, is what most Indian cinema is today. All right, there's a small proportion of it that is moving away. Not so small when you think that cinema audiences are becoming more urban today than they used to be. And so it's becoming much more, much less obvious and more subtle. But most of it is not particularly cut to suit the Western, North American, Western Europe. Mm-hmm. Figure. Mm.
Though I would argue that American cinema has become very loud and repetitive as well. We do it in 90 minutes as a rule, or, you know, 102 minutes. But the other thing that I think has changed a lot, and maybe as the moments have happened that we've tried to do crossover hasn't happened as well, is I think that the idea of sweet cinema in America has kind of died. Movies like The Terminal last year, or movies like Win a Date with Tad Hamilton, and kind of these sweet things, unless they're very specifically aimed at teenage girls and star Hilary Duff, who has a big television audience that comes with her and can be assured of doing $40 million, $50 million, those pictures have been generally unsuccessful. And I think the Indian cinema that we didn't tend to see has a kind of sweet thing about it. It doesn't have sex. You know, the sex is not graphic, even though they are gyrating their hips quite a bit. And there's become – the American cinema has kind of looked for shortcuts, and teenagers want to have – apparently, some of that edge, that quote-unquote edge, even if it's ultimately not very intellectually stimulating in American cinema these days.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, we have a caller here to bring in the conversation. Why don't we do that and see what's on their mind? Here's somebody on Champagne, line number one, right here. Hello.
Yeah, thank you. I kind of wanted to go further down the road of possible influence of Bollywood on Hollywood. You sort of talked on both sides of that a little bit, but a couple examples I was just wanting to get your input on. And, you know, one movie that I think of is sort of an attempt at crossover, and, you know, maybe, you know, you won't think so, but I saw a movie called Guru, which sort of is very explicit in terms of its reference to Bollywood-style film. And then also I was wondering if you think that there was some influence of Bollywood on the making of the movie Moulin Rouge.
Yes. I think Moulin Rouge borrowed very consciously from the Indian style of music and film, Bollywood dancing and so forth. I haven't seen Guru, so I can't comment on that. I personally don't think that Bollywood has had any measurable influence more than perhaps a tip of the hat from time to time from Hollywood. Bollywood is a name that is a flavor of the month, and I think it's that month is long past. I don't think it's something that will last. I don't think it's an ice cream that basically is too much desired. Flavor or no flavor. I don't think there's anything about Bollywood that really feeds into something basic, fundamental in, let's say, the North American psyche and makeup. What do you think, David?
I think you're correct, sadly, in some ways. Because I think there is – I mean, I actually like some of the kinder, gentler filmmaking. The Guru is an interesting attempt at a crossover made by a female director – and it's probably the dirtiest Bollywood film ever made. I mean, there's a lot of sex in it, and one of the through stories is that it's a porno actress who ends up with Jimmy Mystery, who becomes a fake guru, and somehow this female director got Marissa Tomei and Heather Graham to do more obscene things on screen with most of their clothes on than I think any male director ever could have without enormous amounts of money to pay them. But it was a very strange kind of Bollywood. It was an interesting attempt. and actually did much better overseas in Europe than it did here. It kind of died here. And I do think certainly Moulin Rouge was a very strongly influenced. But Baz Luhrmann kind of took some of the tenets and mixed it with kind of old American musicals and pop music. And he's really, I think he's a genius. He's, you know, he created something new. And, you know, I'm not sure. I'm curious, actually, whether television, as it becomes more accessible in India, is it very influenced by American television, or are you making your own? Is it primarily Indian television, or is it the world television?
It's primarily very Indian, but except that the sitcom format has arrived in a very major way. But otherwise, it is very Indian. Of course, the news is the news is the news. Sitcoms are sitcoms are sitcoms. And documentaries are documentaries. So I suppose in that sense, you could say they have absorbed an international kind of format.
Mm-hmm.
But it feeds into the eternal verities of Indian communication, which is the obvious and which is the repetitive and the so on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
David Inge, is it possible to ask the caller a question?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. I was wondering whether the caller has any evidence that Bollywood is, in fact, influencing Hollywood stars or content?
Well, I can't say that I do, but then I don't think that, you know, there's been that much exposure here to the style. And you know, I agree that, you know, it'd probably be pretty hard, but it just seems like that, you know, there's so much borrowing in all art forms that, you know, there's a rich source there for, you know, North Americans and Europeans to draw on as, you know, something to get influence from.
Well, the tradition of American cinema is theft. I mean, that is, and any good director will tell you that a great director is a great thief, picking shots and moments and things from pictures from all over the world. But I mean, we brought over, in the early days of American cinema, you know, the Western had its own kind of place, but we really brought over Eastern Europeans who created that cinema. Noir became part of America, really was a German influence. We adapted, you know, the musical, which also had a heavily German influence and British influence, and then bit by bit we steal things. And so The Matrix, for instance, is heavily influenced by Asian cinema, but it's not Asian cinema. And if you look at, you know, we were talking before about pictures that have come over here, Crouching Tiger and whatever, part of the amazing thing about those pictures doing well here is not so much that they're Asian even, but that they're not of the mindset that the American pictures tend to have. America kind of takes the way of doing kung fu or whatever you want to call it, the different forms of it, and adapts them to the American mindset of a story and kind of uses them and makes them more extreme and adds computer graphics where there were none. And there is a great, you know, I look at the old, there was a last year in Los Angeles, and you'll see them around on DVD. The Shaw Brothers movies from Hong Kong were put out by Celestial. Miramax bought the entire collection to theoretically remake them. Whether that happens, we'll find out. But you see some of these pictures from 1973, 1974. There's no computer graphics. There's nothing. And yet there's a joy of film that is in some ways kind of lost by the way America kind of takes it and just blows it up into something much, much bigger.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the comments of the caller. We're a little bit past the midpoint here. We have with us two guests who are both, or really both, have written about film, Jerzy de Kunia and David Poland. And in addition, Jerzy de Kunia has acted in films and on the stage. They're both here for the film festival, Roger Ebert's Overlook Film Festival. And questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Something else I'm interested in having Jerzy de Kunia talk a little bit about, there are a lot of places around the world where their homegrown film industries have really struggled and have had to compete with movies produced in the United States. Does that, even with as large a film industry as you have in India, does that happen there?
Well, I'm happy to report, in a way happy to report, that 95% of the screenings in India are of Indian movies. Mm-hmm. And Hollywood has made a 5% incursion, if that. It's restricted to the large metropolitan cities. and in the large metropolitan cities, to 10% of the screening space. So in that sense, the Indian industry is more than holding out against Hollywood. And not just because of language. After all, Hollywood films tend to be in English, are in English, but also because of the content, which is at a far remove from the Indian mindset. But what is beginning to happen is that large, big production, Jurassic Park 1 and 2, they were dubbed in Hindi and did superbly. So in other words, the big money Hollywood product can be dubbed, not subtitled, dubbed into an Indian language and does very well. Now, whether that is going to be, whether that is a trend that will grow and strengthen is not as yet very clear. But what is clear is what has been dubbed into Indian languages has done extraordinarily well. But the Indian product is happy and well in one sense. Is it happy and well in terms of its content, in terms of its style? Does the past really guarantee the future? Now, there's a funny contradiction. The formulaic film is declining in its appeal. And yet, the director, the most recent director, Farah Khan, a woman director, as a matter of fact, 4 months ago, produced, directed, presented a film called It'll Come Back to Me in a Minute. She made a special point of saying that she was going back to the past. It was the future belongs to the past, in other words, according to her. All the things that have been successful in Indian cinema in the past are in that film of hers. Hum Tum is what it's called. And hugely successful. I mean, it's the kind of film that has suddenly revived hopes in Bollywood that, well, you know, there is a future for us after all. A formulaic film. A formula film where she's borrowed elements of the formula film, put them all together. It's a Indian masala film that has done very well. And yet, at the same time, you've got The Black, you've got The Page Three, you've got The Dooms, the new style, Sanjay Leela Bhansali, who promised. Now, I think the answer really lies in probably the truth that both will now have to coexist. Where once upon a time, there was nothing to coexist with the formula film. We now have something to coexist with it.
Well, it's interesting because we fight this issue here in Hollywood all the time, here in Hollywood, in Champaign-Urbana, home of Hollywood. But the issue of, you know, what is good for the business, you know, as a film critic, you spend a lot of time with people who really hate anything that Hollywood puts out on principle. And it's an interesting phenomenon when you're talking about, you know, the expansion of the genre, because I'm a great believer, well, in a world like with Hollywood, with as many big, stupid movies as there may be, you still have a movie like, say, one of the classics, I think, in this regard is Castaway, which has a 40-minute silent sequence, no music, no dialogue, and yet it did $250 million in this country. And, you know, people went and sat in theater for 2.5 hours, 2 hours of it with Tom Hanks on an island, 40 minutes of that without a single word being spoken. And so it still can be done. The miracles happen every year. Sideways happens. Million Dollar Baby happens and did $100 million. So in all the despair that we tend to have in this country about the quality going down and becoming too formulaic, it's interesting that the balance is there. And I think that there's always hope for cinema that way.
Okay, let me ask. Isn't there a relationship between the proportion of production that is dross, that is dreadful, but that is necessary to produce that top-of-the-pyramid quality?
I think probably so. I mean, I think ultimately the thing that people forget as critics particularly is that it's business and that ultimately it is show business and that there is – even to make a small bad film – you know, even to make a small art film now, you're looking at $3, $4, $5 million. A movie like Sideways costs $16 million. A movie like I Heart Huckabees, which was really meant for a very small audience, $30 million. So, you know, you look at the – there's a lot that's dependent on box office now. There's a lot of every local paper and probably the Daily Illini as well, has box office on Monday morning. So people become much too aware, I think, of the money side of it, and much less. But it's, you know, that's what drives the machine. You can all the small movies now are being made by studios, essentially. Everybody likes to pretend that Fox Searchlight isn't independent. Everybody likes to pretend that Miramax isn't independent. But they're all being funded by the multinationals and these huge corporations that make the same stupid movies that they complain about also. So, yeah, in many ways, one has to feed the other. And the scary part is wondering how long a company like Disney, for instance, will put up with the machinations and the ups and downs of the smaller business of a company like Miramax or, you know, Sony with Sony Classics, though they seem to be expanding the amount of merchandise they want to have on the shelf.
No, but David, should you be complaining about the huge quantity of rubbish when it is that rubbish that is creating the audiences and it is that rubbish that is creating a cinema to react against? You know, so maybe there is a great usefulness in that. Certainly, it has yielded results in India. It is because of the badness of the conventional Hollywood product that is beginning to create the alternate cinema, I think. It's like the Calle du Cinema. The Calle du Cinema was a reaction to Hollywood,
yeah,
wasn't it? So thank God for Bollywood.
You know, one thing to return to, and I'm curious about what David Poland have to say about this, to return to the subject of the potential appeal for in the United States for movies that are not in English, where it is they come from. You know, the success of some of the Chinese movie we've talked about notwithstanding, it does seem to be, it's difficult. There seem to be a limited number of people who are willing to go to a movie and read subtitles.
Right.
Is that, do you think that that's something that audience is just fixed and that it's always going to be that way, that the people who are interested in seeing movies like that and are willing to sit through a movie where you have to read the dialogue is always going to be a relatively small number of people?
Well, I think it's an interesting problem because the pictures that are done well generally don't have a lot of dialogue. So if you look at Crouching Tiger, which is a movie I really love, my voice is changing. But a movie
you're
I really
growing
like.
Up. You're growing
I'm growing up.
Up.
Finally, I'm going to go to Bollywood now. But a picture like that doesn't have a lot of dialogue, so and you don't really have to follow it. Kung Fu Hustle, which is just coming out, is a similar issue, which is I took my 15-year-old nephew who refused to see anything with subtitles forever, and he sat through the DVD of that picture happily, and he really enjoyed the movie. So there is an education process, but I think if you get into the more intricate pictures where they are dialogue-driven, we're just not used to it. And there really is – it's going to be very hard, I think, to get people used to it, particularly as people start to watch things on DVD more and more. On the flip side is the DVD experience gives people a chance to taste these things without having to invest as much money. Going to the movie theater now is a $40, $50 proposition for most couples, you know, particularly if you have a kid at home and they have to get a babysitter and all of that, parking. So for $3, you can get it from Blockbuster, from Netflix, or from the different places. And those are expanding. Netflix, when they started, had a much smaller range of foreign language films and documentaries and other special interest, quote-unquote, films. And they've gotten a lot better about that. So the world for that – I'm a huge proponent of bringing the world cinema to America. And I think that, unfortunately, I've spoken to big studios about it who are if they want to put out a DVD, they feel they have to sell at least 100,000 units of a DVD to make it worthwhile. And I'm like – the third or fourth top movie in France last year did not get a American distribution. We're only seeing the very, very highest level of commercial cinema from those countries. But there is more and more of an appetite. So it's getting to be now where you can sell 5,000 of those DVDs. And maybe in 5 years or 2 years, you can sell 10,000 of those DVDs. And eventually you build an appetite. And I think what we really have to do in this country is create the opportunities to get access to these pictures and then slowly – that will build. But ultimately – and we don't really like dubbed films either here. So it's a real problem. A part of it is that we have so much product coming out. Every weekend we have three or four or five major releases. And so it's hard to get to those. You know, if there's one film you want to see each week, very few people go to the cinema more than 10 times a year in this country. So it's a real tough problem.
Yeah. Let me ask both the Davids this question. What would you say about Iranian – cinema, Iranian films. Would you say that they have made a reasonably deep incursion into the market here the U.S.?
No.
No.
None.
No, I think that there probably have been a handful of films, and we're talking about three or four, maybe, or five, that have gotten critical attention, and that if people are fortunate that they live in a place like this where we have a theater that shows foreign language films and independent films, maybe you get a chance to see it. But as you were talking, David, about the fact that there may indeed be some people who, if they want to see a movie like that, the only way that they can see it is to see it on DVD because there's no opportunity for them to see it. So, I mean, in that particular case, I would say no, there have been a few films that have gotten attention, but very few.
Yeah, in the critical community, there's been a huge wave for Iranian cinema in the last couple of years. Now we're moving on to South America. That's the next wave. But Makhlouf and others have a place. And in fact, there are a few of the films being shown in Tribeca as we speak in New York at their film festival. But unfortunately, except for the Iranian – there are theaters in New York City, for instance, that show Iranian films that Iranians come to and that Persians come to. And there are, cultural hotbeds, but in terms of any real commercial input, I mean, Story of the Weeping Camel, I guess, is the only picture that's really made any inroads. And I think that's, $4 or $5 million. So it's just not a business. And I think the entire art film business, unfortunately, has become this split thing where there are pictures that make under $1 million and there are pictures that make over 10. And there's very little in between. There's very little room. There's very little money to be made in that. So the investment of a company like Searchlight or like Sony Classics even or, they're less inclined to chase those movies.
And even the Latin American film, you feel, like that most recent one of the across Latin America motorcycle chase.
Motorcycle Diary.
A big disappointment in this country financially. It was a huge success at Sundance. Clearly the best film at Sundance that year. I mean, pretty much across the board, people agreed. Love the picture. It came out. It barely came out in September of last year in this country and got some critical attack because of the whole Che Guevara issue. Was it too nice to Che? Blah, blah, blah. And basically disappeared. It did $9 million, I believe, but it was really considered a disappointment. Didn't make the Oscar push. And after Y Tu Mama Tambien, and that's the thing. Y Tu Mama was kind of a breakthrough picture, and then Almodovar has a position in the industry. But it's a very selective thing, and it's very specific directors, and it has to have sex, and it has to have violence, or it has to have one of these genre pulls, even to get the art audience off their duff. Mm. So when a movie like Russian Art comes along, for instance, a couple of years ago, and does almost $5 million, it's a huge – or it did $3.5 million, excuse me. Huge success though. I mean that's considered like a breakthrough, life-changing world event that Russian Art did $3.5 million in America.
That's that one-shot film.
It's the one-shot film in Russia that goes through the museum. But $3.5 million is – that you make a bad horror movie – we've had a spate of very bad horror movies that have all opened to $21, $22 million in the last year. You can make junk and do much, much better. And so, unfortunately, again, it's business. You have to find people who are really committed to make the investment in the smaller business.
That speaks the voice of the practical and doom.
Exactly. We have about 10 minutes left. We have a caller we'd like to bring in. Maybe very quickly, I should introduce again our guest, David Poland. Writes a daily entertainment industry column, The Hot Button, and he's also editor-in-chief publisher of MovieCityNews.com, which is a movie news site. Tristan DeCunha is also a journalist from India, has written about many things, but also about theater and film, and also has acted on stage and in film, and they're both here for the Overlooked Film Festival. We have someone over in Indiana to talk with here on line four, right here. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. Nice program. It's interesting change. My question may not have anything to do with the thread that's been going on for the last 45 minutes, but it's something that's interested me from a long time ago. I first read Holloway's Film Goer and a couple other books where he said that he's no longer looking at movies on TV, etc., mainly because of the aspect ratio and that, large parts of the boundary of the film are gone. And I remember somebody making a comment some time ago that the DVDs now, but VHS, a lot of the movies that never are shown on the screen, that's where you can say that made $110 million that weekend because it's all purchased by rental. And I was wondering about DVD. What is there any artistic interest anymore in how you fill up the aspect ratio? You know, seeing something like, Grand Prix, for example, or 2001 in particular, the one I remember because I took some students to see it from a small country town in the South, and it essentially blew their minds. Then you show that on DVD, even in, letterbox form, and you just sort of miss some of the immensity of it. And I just wonder if anybody takes that in consideration. And the next thing I see is eventually I'm sure we're going to have some flat screens that are damn near the size of ones in the theaters for the wealthy and the very rich. I just wonder if that has anything at all to do with what's going on in movies now.
Well, speaking for the wealthy of the very rich, which I'm not, but I do have a 39-inch TV, and DVD has changed the world in that regard. I mean, you don't see pan and scan very much anymore, which is the old way of taking a widescreen movie, and you know the conceptual camera would move to one part of the frame or the other because it couldn't all fit into the square television frame. There are very few films now that you don't have the letterbox option if you want to see it. And ultimately, the power of home cinema has become enormous. However, it is still a lot of money. HD is coming, and they're going to try to take money out of your pocket again. There's a big fight in Hollywood right now over high-definition DVD because they feel that everybody who bought the DVDs this last generation will go out and buy them again for another $15, and they'll take some more money out of your pocket so you'll get more definition. It's 4,000 lines of definition. On the new systems that they're putting out. So that's why MGM was bought by Sony, was so they could put out their version of high-definition DVD and steal money from your pocket. I mean, take money from your pockets that you would give so willingly. But it's changed. I mean, the cinema – unfortunately, the majority of money that is now made in almost every movie is profitable based on DVD, not on theatrical. And it's become a weird back-ended business where home entertainment divisions of these companies – drive pictures being made. And a lot of the choices that are made, even in very big mainstream movies, are based on DVD sales and the idea that certain stars are big DVD sellers. We're in a period right now where the cost of making movies in Hollywood has gotten so huge, which I don't think is the case in India, but it's gotten so enormous that you can't make make money in domestic theatrical. And they're very aware of that. But the problem is that the price keeps on going up to match the DVD sales. And eventually there will be a crash, I think, when people stop buying DVDs. Eventually there will be a point where you can get it directly into your video box and your TiVo or whatever. Yeah. And the business is in for a very, very rude awakening when they're spending $120 million on a drama that does $60 million in business and they're still able to make money this year. 3 or 4 years from now, that'll change. So it's really kind of messed up the equilibrium right now. Things that sell well on DVD are far more valuable than things that are just good. And quality is often, you know, never for the director, never for the actors, never for the writer, but for the studio system, what they can sell on DVD is very important. And the scary part is right now, DVD sales of television have overcome DVD sales of film.
Really?
So they're much more – they're making a lot more money selling you Seinfeld season 2 than they are trying to sell the big movie from last year, Pearl Harbor or whatever. Pearl Harbor was a case where it made a lot of money. But so DVD has really changed how we do it. Having it in your house, the expectation of buying an HD TV, which very few people have at this point. I am a bit of a technophile and I still haven't bothered to invest the money in HD TV because there are only a few channels that really show it, and I don't really need to see the acne on football players' faces. But it's changed everything, and how you get things into your house, and the way of downloading DVDs off the internet is, you know, legally or illegally, is a big part of the future. And the experience of going to the cinema, which is what the great thing about Ebert's Festival, is that you come here and you sit in a movie theater with 1,000 people and you experience the movie. And people want that. And I think that eventually you'll see a revolution where people rebel against DVDs and rebel against being in their house all the time and want to get out to the theater. I think the movie industry has to decide – this has become a rant. I'm sorry. But the movie industry has to decide to bring the prices back down. It's now getting to be $10, $11, $12 a movie. in big cities. They have to bring it back down to 6, 7, 8. There has to be second-run cinema. So like my nephew who sees a movie 7 times can go back for $5 the 3rd time, the 4th time, the 5th time because he wants to sit in the theater. He wants to have that experience, and we're losing that opportunity. Sorry.
I'm sorry that I'm going to have to jump in. I was having a really good time talking with you guys, and I wish we could keep going, but we can't because we've used the time. All I can do is say thank you very much, both of you, for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Jerson Tacunya, he is an Indian journalist, writes about theater and film, also has performed on stage and on screen. And our other guest, Dave Poland, he is puts together a daily entertainment industry column. That's the Hot Button. And then he's also editor-in-chief of MovieCityNews.com. It's a movie news website. So if you're crazy for movies, this is one place you can go and read about what's going on. And they're both here for Roger Ebert's Overlook Film Festival.
We'll be in front of the Virginia if you want to find us.
And if you want to see an Indian movie and you can try to get in, Thal, the film will be shown Sunday at noon. Otherwise, you'll just have to go down to where you rent your videos and see what you can find.
Or come to India.
Yeah, or come to India. Good plan. Thank you both very, very much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
The broadcast today made possible with support from Warden Martin Subaru, a Subaru Stellar Performer Certified dealership, now in their new location in front of the Savoy 16 Theater across from Warden Martin Nissan. Information available on the web at wardenmartin.subaru.com. The broadcast is also made possible by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign, and the staff there at The Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting AM 580. Well, that is it for us here on Focus, but we want you to stay tuned. There is much more in the way of news and other features coming up as part of the Afternoon Magazine with Celeste Quinn. And in your 1 o'clock hour, you will be talking with some more folks who are here for the festival.
Jonathan Rosenbaum, film critic for the Chicago Reader and the author of many books about the movies, will be one of our guests this afternoon in the 1 o'clock hour of the program. And Ken Winokur will also join us. He's one of the members of the Alloy Orchestra. The three-man ensemble writes and performs live accompaniment to classic silent films. They are Roger Ebert's special guests this afternoon for a screening of the silent classic Phantom of the Opera. Let's take a look now at what's happening on the Chicago Board of Trade and Mercantile Exchange. May wheat trading at 310 3/4, down 1/4. July wheat 320 3/4, unchanged. May corn 209 1/2, down 1 3/4. July 217 1/2, down 2. September 224 3/4, down 1 3/4. December corn 234, down 1 3/4. May soybean 637 1/2, down 1/4. July 644 3/4, down 1/2. May 630 3/4, down 3/4. May meal 197.60, that up 70. May oil 22.85, down 10. April feeder cattle 110.55, up 17.5. April live cattle 92.15, up 75. May lean hog 75.30, up